in the laws of prayer, in subsection 106, and this talks about Mihem HaPaturim Mitfilah Uboy Dalet Sifim. Who are the people that are exempt, don't have to daven? And there is four subsections. So number one, Kol HaPaturim Mikriya Shema, anyone who is exempt from reading the Shema, as we learned earlier, Paturim Mitfilah, are also exempt from prayer. If you don't have to do the Shema, you don't have to do the prayer. Again, we're talking prayer, we're talking the Amida. That's what we're talking about. V'chol shechayiv b'kriya shema, anyone who is obligated to read the Shema, chayiv b'tefillah, is obligated in the prayer. What he says, there is an exception. We have to understand, by definition, the prayer is on a lesser level than the Shema, because the Shema is a Torah obligation. The Torah requires us to read the Shema, but the prayer has been instituted by the rabbis. So therefore, there are certain exemptions that don't apply. Generally, we say anybody who has to do the Shema has to do the prayer, and if you don't have to do the Shema, you don't have to do the prayer. With the exception, there's some people that don't have to do the Shema, but they still have to do the prayer. Chutz ma'amalavin es hameis she'ein lemita tzoydech b'hem. It's talking about those people who are escorting the deceased to the funeral. So you're going to the funeral, and you're escorting him, and you are not really needed. In other words, you're not the carrying the casket, you're not the pallbearers, you're not doing the actual work. You're just out of honor. You're just in the crowd that is going behind. So as far as Shema, the only exemption will be if you're actually carrying, you don't have to do the Shema, if you're actually carrying the casket, because that's why when you're occupied in that mitzvah, we don't tell you to interrupt to do the Shema. But if you are just walking behind it, and there's a whole crowd walking behind, so we tell you, step aside, do your Shema, and then you'll come back. Don't just go on. But so they would be liable, they're obligated to do the Shema. Paturim mitfilah, they're exempt from prayer. But the prayer, the rabbi said, okay, you're on a funeral, you're on a procession over there, and even though they don't need you there, because it's from the rabbinic origin, the rabbanim are lenient, and they say, even though it's going to mean you're going to miss your prayer, it's okay, you can stay and go on to the procession. Shibi Amida. There's another reason. Because to do the Amida, to do the Shema Amida, you have to stop and you have to stand still. The Shema, you only have to stop, he's going to, for the first verse. So he says, Shihi Amida, v'eini choyim lishos kol kach. You can't delay so much until you're going to finish Amida. Avo, kriya Shema, yike kavanos amidos enel b'posikudishin. The main, by Shema, reading the Shema, the main intention and the stopping is only by the first verse. You can very easily stand and have kavana. So there, stop for a second, do your Shema, then go back to the procession. Because you only need to say really one verse with kavana. But to start doing the Amida, it's going to take a long time. So don't stop, you can continue going. And okay, we'll leave it over here. Let's just see, we'll do a quick letter from the Rebbe. And we'll see. What? Shema. Just do a Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Shem Echad. And that's really, if you think about it, that's really the most important thing that one can, one needs to do, just at least minimally. That's a Torah obligation. That's besides the tefillin. But once in the morning and once in the evening to say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Also before you retire at nighttime, if you don't do anything else, just say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That's it. At least that's the minimum. Like we say, we have to learn. We were talking about in the last few classes that in life we have to prioritize. I mean, there's a lot of things that we want to do. There's a lot of things that we want to accomplish, but we can't accomplish everything. So we have to prioritize what is the most important. I once gave them the parable. I gave them the parable of this professor. I think it's used in some commercial advertisement about about filling your time with the most important things in your life, and then you leave room for less important things. So this professor comes into the classroom with a barrel which is empty, and he says to, what, you remember that story? And he says to the students, I want to make a test today. I want to show you something. I want to say something interesting. He calls over to one of the students and he asks them, can you, takes out from underneath his desk a bag with golf balls. He says, I want you to fill this jar with all these golf balls. And he goes and fills them up all the way. He says, fill it to the top. Fills it all to the top. And he has the barrel in front of the classroom, and he says to the class, he says, is the barrel full now? And they all said, absolutely full. He says, you go sit down. He calls over another student. Now he takes out a bag of marbles. And he says to the student, he says, go take these marbles and fill up the jar. And shakes it around a little bit, and the marbles make their way between the golf balls. And now it's all the ways, the marbles all the ways till the lip, all the ways to the top. He says to the class, is the jar full now? They say, yeah, absolutely. Now there's no room. He says, go sit down. He calls another student. He takes out a bag of sand. And he says it to the, he says, fill it up. And now the sand goes and fills it up. And now it's always to the top filled with sand. He says, go sit down. He says, full, absolutely. Calls over another student and he says, take my coffee and put it in there. And puts his coffee inside. So he says to his students, what is this metaphor? He says, in life, the jar is a metaphor of life and our time. And the time is our jar. And the question is, what do we fill our jar with? What do we fill them? He says, in life, you know, there are some very important things. Your religion, your family, your life, your health. Those are the most important things in life. Excuse me. Hello. Good morning. I'm finishing my class here. What's going on? I left it with mommy. I did not take it. Thank you. So he says, like, then you have the next step is, you know, what kind of job you have, who your friends are. Those are important things. And then you have the trivial things that are not really that important to you, but you know, where do you go on vacation or whatever, you know, other things, just day-to-day things that are not a matter. So he says like this, you see, if you fill your jar, your time, with the sand, with the trivial things, so then you don't have any place for those golf balls, which is the most important things, or even the marbles, which are the second important, because your jar is full. So if you fill your time with the most in unimportant things, then you don't have time for the other things. So he says, and if you fill your jar with the less important things, then you don't have the time for the most important things. So he says, therefore, the order you have to do is the way I demonstrated to you. First, you fill your life. You make sure that the most important things in your life, your family, your health, your religion, your neshama, if I can add, that they're taken care of. That's the most important thing. Make sure, fill your life with those important things. You got extra time, and you got extra energy, you got more space in your brain to accommodate something more. Take in your friends, take in other things that are important. Which car you like, this, that, whatever. And when you're done with that, then you fill it up with the sand with the less important things. Okay, so the message is pretty clear. One of the students pipes up and says, well, what's the metaphor of the cup of coffee? He says, no matter how long your day and your life is filled up with matter, with everything, always make time for a cup of coffee with a friend. So the point over here is that we have to prioritize in life, and also in our religion, we have to prioritize. We have to say, what is the most important thing that we have? What is the most important thing for me to do? So then, when it comes to a biblical command versus a rabbinic command, the most important thing is the biblical command, because that takes the priority. Now, it doesn't always, it's not across the board all the time. Sometimes certain mitzvot are very significant to the person, even though they may be not of such a important origin as the others, because they provide for you like a support. Let's say, for example, coming to shul. So one, technically, even though we've been learning a lot that it's better to come to shul to daven, and it's more, and God, we don't need the angels, it goes straight to God, and all these good things, but still, you could technically fulfill your obligation davening at home. You don't have to daven in the shul. We don't. However, sometimes the shul provides some kind of a support, because if you're going to stay at home, I'm not so sure you are going to daven. And even if you are going to daven, you may not daven it fully. And in other, if you do it together with other people, and you have yourself, you set yourself up for that, this is the time I come, and this is the time I do, it helps you. It's the support that you get from people doing things in a quorum, like we're doing in a minyan. That's why we do the minyan. And it always sounds to me strange. Like, I bet you, we're always looking for the 10th person, you know, like today we're waiting for always for the 10th person. I bet you if a minyan was 9 people, we'd always be looking for the 9th. If it was 8 people, we'd be looking for the 8th. I mean, whatever it is, we're always looking for that last person to come in. Matter of fact, I told you, when I have a picture of this, I was in the Bet HaTfutzot in Israel. They have a museum of the diaspora, the whole through, very, very, very interesting. I spend there maybe 2-3 hours in the heat, and the air conditioning in Israel doesn't work well. I don't know, in these buildings, they don't have the money, or they, I don't know, but it's, even with the air conditioning, it was boiling, it was impossible. So I just spent there a very couple of hours, and I enjoyed it immensely. But it's something to study. There's just so much information over there about our history. It's just a beautiful, beautiful place. So one of the pictures they have there is a setting over there is where there's 9 people in shul, and the shamus is standing by the door trying to chop a tent. It's so cute. They have like little statues over there, people sitting by the stand, by the tables, and davening, and somebody by the door say, "Can you come in?" Looking for a tent for the minyan. I thought that was so cute, you know. I thought that was so cute and everything else. All right, let's see if we get a letter in here for a minute. Let's see here. What letter did you say we were up to? Anybody remember? Wouldn't they,
1,090 or
89? 90, I think it would be, no? Let's see, this would be.
I think either 89, 90, or 91.
Okay, we'll try 89. I think maybe we did 89.
Did you do a letter yesterday?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And I think. So here, I think we did this actually. Yeah, we did this one. So let's see if we can do the next one. Okay. Okay, let's see. Oh. I don't know which city. They're not posing the city over here. Let me see if in the footnote it says here. Oh, so this